Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. Today, we have Lydia Infante with us, Senior SEO Manager. Hi, Lydia.
Hi. I think it's really funny, the little panicked face that everybody makes right before pronouncing my name.
Yeah, well, I wanted to see if I could get it right. I'm not very good with pronunciations. But yeah, just for the audience who don't know who you are, please could you give an overview of who Lydia is and what you do within the SEO industry?
Yeah, so I am Lydia Infante. I'm working as senior SEO manager for sanity.io, which is a headless CMS and structured data platform. That's pretty cool. And I've been in the industry for 8 years doing SEO now, and it's going to be 10 years in marketing next month, which is kind of insane because I'm only 29, but I did start when I was 19. But yeah, it puts it in perspective to think that I've been doing this for 10 years. I was born in Barcelona, and I've been working in like media, I've been working in SaaS, in e-commerce. I would say one of my favorite verticals to work in is SaaS. And I'm quite involved with the community of women in SEO. And I create some weekly threads every Thursday of the best content created by women in the SEO industry in that week. And you can find it on Twitter with the hashtag SEOWomen.
Wonderful. I was just looking at your profile on Twitter, and you've got, is it a degree in psychology?
Yeah. I got a Bachelor of Science in psychology. I actually specialize in psychology of marketing. I did my thesis in persuasion to click online, which is psychology of persuasion to click, which was an interesting one. I was working for a publisher at the time, and I used the data sets of our publisher to kind of like download all of their posts on Facebook for about a year. I classified the headlines and then measured the CTR of each of the headlines. And that was pretty cool.
Do you think understanding psychology really does help in the SEO world?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think some of the most useful stuff that I learned in psychology to help me in my job wasn't in the psychology of marketing or psychology of consumer class. It was in psychology of perception and memory. So how do people perceive and remember? These includes reading patterns, colors, experiences, emotion. I thought that was like an incredibly, incredibly useful subject. Motivation to action was also a subject that was really, really good. And it came with like a ridiculously thorough book that was, it was probably the best read that I had that on my degree. And we did a lot of statistics. So I do think that psychology is like an amazing entryway to marketing, to digital marketing most.
Yeah, I mean, unless you understand the audience and how they think and how they tick and what they're going to do, SEO is just literally keywords.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. I don't think the industry yet, I mean, some of the industry are, but I don't think the industry yet is in that right mindset on really understanding and thinking about the customer. Like, yeah, they see them as numbers and data and users and keywords. And I think that side of it really needs to come forward.
Yeah, I think we've been thinking about Google for so long that we've lost kind of sight of what we're doing. Also, I think marketing might be, and this is a theory, okay? This is going, because this is unedited, so it's going. I think that marketing is perceived as a bit of a more feminine industry at times. And SEO is a little bit male dominated. So I feel like there's some rejection from some classic SEOs to consider themselves marketers, because that's like more of a feminine discipline, which is why, and I see that especially in my country, everyone's obsessed with like the tech side of things, and we're going to hack it this way, and we're going to hack it that way, when that's not necessarily going to move the needle. And I feel like part of what's stifling innovation in the industry is a masculine rejection to being called a marketer. We're trying to be like you're not a programmer. You can code, maybe, for sure. But if you're an SEO, you're a marketer. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, the whole objective of SEO is part of the marketing piece.
Exactly.
I mean, exactly. The way I see it, it's just a big jigsaw puzzle, and SEO is one piece of it. But you did mention there that you still think the SEO industry is predominantly male-orientated. Now, I know that lots of things are happening in the industry to obviously bring the women forefront, like for speaking and everything. Do you think that is actually changing?
Yeah, I do. I do actually think so. Sometimes we catch glimpses on Twitter of a side of the industry that's not on with these changes, right? Most of the time, I think, oh, this is so inclusive. This is an amazing industry. I'm surrounded by people who get it. Or like, yes, innovation comes from diversity. So like, let's bring everybody forward. And then sometimes Twitter will have it that I see glimpses of the other side, right? So I get agency owners or CEOs tweeting at me, or I see them tweeting about how women are just less interested in SEO. And it's like, oh yeah, that gene, the SEO gene that we all have, that's like the gender that makes women less interested. That's absurd. And I think there's a point that we are not communicating correctly, and I'm going to try to communicate it now. We're not saying that we need to sacrifice quality for the sake of a quota. Absolutely fucking not. What we're saying, or what we've not communicated correctly, is that there is a quota already that is sacrificing quality for the sake of the quota. It's a male quota, right? It's not a written down quota. It's an unconscious, biased kind of quota that self-perpetuates and lends men a little bit more power within the industry than, I wouldn't say that it's due, but then that is stifling innovation and taking extremely high quality SEOs out of the picture, out of the conversation. I guess what I'm trying to say is we're not trying to get women into speaking slots or writing slots or jobs just because they're women and we're willing to sacrifice quality for it. We are sacrificing quality to get men in these places in an unconscious bias that leads to this unconscious male quota. I don't know if I finally managed to explain it, but there it goes.
Right. Now, there's quite a few people, especially on Twitter, who mention things, who say this needs to change, that needs to change, but nobody's actually actioning things. You know what I mean? I'm trying to say is some people who've said, yes, this needs to change, have been then told, well, instead of just saying it, why don't you action something? So for anyone out there, male or female, that can help push the industry forward as a total neutral, based on skills and knowledge and nothing else, what needs to happen? What can people actually do?
That is a very good
instead
question.
Of just saying it. Yeah. Saying it's one thing, but what can they actually do to make this happen collectively? Yeah.
So there's different aspects of it, and there isn't a perfect solution yet. In fact, like, there's a lot of research and science happening, not for the SEO industry, but like for business in general, around how to prevent these unconscious bias and get a bit of a more inclusive environment for everybody. There's some people who are already actioning stuff, like, for example, the way that Arish Abuli has created the Women in Tech SEO community is really interesting, because she's driving mentorships. I was a mentor last year. I'm a mentee this year. She's building a table for women to network and uplift other women. So that is an excellent initiative. The stuff that I do, where I highlight women, female creators in the industry, is also pretty relevant, right? Because it helps break the bias that women are not making content, or that women are not as good SEOs as men. Sophie Gibson provided, she's the technical SEO director at Studio Hawk. She provided a bit of a guideline of what to do when you're invited to a panel or an event to speak, and you think like there are some underrepresented minorities within that panel. So you can ask what the panel is going to be like before accepting. You can refuse to participate if you're the only woman, for example. That kind of action. But there isn't really a solution yet. I think, maybe I'm naive, but I think tackling the unconscious bias might be the best way to go about it. And empowering women along the way, in the way that Arish is doing, is also an excellent way to go about this.
Yeah, the Women in Tech SEO community, she's done an absolutely amazing job. And I've spoke to her personally, you know, a few times on it. And I don't know how she does it. I don't know.
Me neither.
I don't know how she actually, you know, runs, has a full-time job, and now as a mother, and still does that. And she said it's because of the team behind her. You know, and I think it, what it's doing, it has highlighted things that maybe I was unaware of. You know, I mean, I get paid to speak on stage at corporate events. You know, it's different for me. I don't often speak at the SEO events, marketing events. See, so I haven't been heavily involved in that side. But to actually, yeah, I mean, the latest one I saw on Twitter was absolutely stupid, that, you know, we've no women speakers because they are on holiday. I mean, that was just pathetic.
I know.
I can't, you know, even comprehend.
I got some private messages from the organizers, and they were interesting. But yeah, that one was really stupid. I agree. That one was dumb.
Yeah. But like I say, it's there are some exceptional women in the industry who are doing amazing jobs, because I've seen their work. I mean, the results and the strategy behind things they're doing blows a lot of the male opponents out of the water.
Yeah, I think women tend to be a lot less gatekeepery. I don't know if your LinkedIn feed looks like my LinkedIn feed, but often there's like men posting like Upwards drafts without any context or numbers, or telling you how they did it. And that's like, yeah, good for you. But then we've got people like Aleda, who Aleda is another freaking force of nature. Like, she has a full-time job. She's an international speaker. You never know what country she's in. She leads the SEO FOMO newsletter, which might be, out of any tools newsletter, the most followed one in the industry. She creates templates, resources, frameworks. She's carrying the learning SEO.io website. So and that is, that's probably my bias, but I feel like women are not as gatekeepery in some aspects, and they, a lot of the work that they do is directed at opening the doors and empowering others and welcoming others into the industry. That, now it's my turn to panic while I pronounce the name. Chima, and I don't remember her last name, so sorry, is leading the Federation of Freelancers. I can't remember exactly the name of her project, but essentially she trains and teaches people of color to get jobs in SEO because they're highly paid jobs and a very good way of breaking inequality, right, is just give disenfranchised people money.
Yeah. I mean, I've mentored a few people from Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Basically, they were so over the moon that I actually spoke to them. And basically, you know, I just give them guidance, and literally they put all the hard work in themselves. And in the end, they changed their life. I didn't change their life because they did the work. They just needed some direction and help. And it's so empowering when that happens. You feel as though something has happened and changed. But I mean, I, from my side, I do feel as though things are changing. Now, yeah, I always ask awkward questions, but I just, it's in my head, so I have to ask it.
Okay.
But do you think things are changing because people feel forced into it, or they want it changed?
A bit of both. I feel like we've created a discourse that's a public discourse where we assume that everyone agrees with us, right? We assume, we speak as if everybody agrees that there is a bias that puts men on top in the industry, right? And we want to look good and we want to belong. So people who disagree with this are not likely to publicly challenge this discourse. They're going to challenge it in small tables. They're going to speak to each other about it. Just like women speak to each other about who are the creepy guys that you need to avoid. Men are probably like, some men are probably like, oh, what is this bullshit? They're just not been in the industry for that long, so it's normal that they don't get as many speaking gigs. I feel like there's a bit of a forceful stream to this, where we have effectively changed what's acceptable to say and think. And I don't think everybody who disagrees feels like they can publicly disagree with it.
Right. Digressing on from that subject onto yourself, you are a senior SEO manager. So as a senior SEO manager, what do you do on a day-to-day basis? What does your actual role look like?
Well, that's a very good question, because I am, 3 weeks into this job, 4 weeks into this job? I recently changed from, I was at BigCommerce before as senior international SEO manager.
BigCommerce? And now
I
tell you what, a funny story. I used to use the BigCommerce platform many, many years ago when it was hosted Interspire, when you could self-host it. Then obviously they stopped selling the actual script to call it BigCommerce and host it themselves. So I was a very earlier adopter of the actual technology behind it.
That's really cool.
Yeah, like I've been in the industry forever, so there is a story to everything, but that's a different thing.
Yeah. So I've moved from BigCommerce really recently, and at BigCommerce, my day-to-day was essentially, I would say, there was a lot of overseeing agency relations and a lot of trying to push things along, like, what's the ETA of this thing? What's the ETA on this other thing? Please push this to publishing. Like, come on, like, let's get going. There was a lot of just making sure that I was in the right rooms to have the right conversations so things wouldn't break when we went, when we launched new markets or when we went international. Ensuring data quality was something that I was doing as well. We had a really funky analytics. I'm pretty sure I'm not allowed to talk about it though. And I think that job was essentially trying to keep things from falling apart while trying to advance the work and just deliver good content internationally. I think though the most important thing that I did was around enablement. So we had a lot more agency budget that we could absorb. We had some internal bottlenecks. We had essentially three bottlenecks, one on legal approval of things, one on content approval of things, and then publishing. So our tech stack was very unfriendly to publishing, and we needed a really big publishing team that knew how to use a headless CMS that shall not be mentioned, maybe, unless it slips in a little bit. That is definitely not Sanity. And it needed so much work just to get anything done, right? And there were some assumptions that the leadership team were taking into, this cannot be changed, this is how things are, these are our challenges, that I challenged. And I feel like moved the culture towards a more can-do culture, a culture of more not assuming that things are what they are and just go ahead with it. I hired the right agencies. I hired the right tools. I cleaned up the data and created the right dashboards for the team to be able to keep track of the process. By the time I left, I had delivered the work for the entire year. So I gave them like 6 months leeway, like, you've got all the briefs, everything's with agency. I think I did the best offboarding that I have ever done in my career, where I literally documented every project that I was working on and had meetings with every person that I was going to offboard it to. It was a really interesting job where I didn't do what I wanted to do, right? I didn't get to publish at the cadence that I wanted to publish. I didn't get to front load my content strategy. What I did was remove two of the three bottlenecks, point the team in the right direction to remove the third bottleneck, which was the CMS bottleneck, hire the right agencies that were going to provide work that was not locked by the bottlenecks. And one of the tools that I think is crucial for what they have at the moment is Content King. So I got them set up with the Content King sales team, because our tech stack was like ever crumbling. So at some point, 634 blog posts disappeared from the Australian website, and we noticed only 3 weeks later, right? When we were looking at, oh, the traffic for our blog has gone down. I wonder if, oops, we have no blog, right? You should know this way faster than we figured that out. And there was a wider agreement that yes, we should definitely keep a monitoring tool on. We also had some issues with the way that our canonicals were kind of like created, and they were changing on a daily, hourly basis. So that is crazy. That should have never happened. So I got them on with Content King. I had the conversations with the tech teams. I feel like at that point, what BigCommerce needed maybe was someone more junior, or for me to come in, do this work, change this culture, create this enablement, and then bring in someone more junior that's not going to get frustrated because I get to publish one article every 2 months, right? This is so unedited. Okay. My job right now is quite different. I'm actually not super sure what my job is at the minute. I can tell you that in my task list for today, let me check it. I've got, well, buying shoes for my wedding. That's my personal task list. I'm going to send some budget requests for some subject matter experts to write some stuff. I'm going to be working on some internal linking for some Shopify initiatives that we've got going on. And I'm going to create two briefs for one of our external writers on two landing pages that I want to see in the next week. Very well, and I'm here, right? Because one of the aspects of my job is SEO evangelism, which I think it's an interesting aspect of my job. I absolutely adore working in SaaS, and I love technical innovation. So a lot of the stuff that I'm doing is getting sanity out there within the SEO community, right? So anyone who's listening to this, if you want a free boosted plan, hit me up. I will get you like, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of API requests for free. Yeah, hit me up. That's also my job.
Right. So anyone that's wanting to progress into an like SEO manager type role, what sort of skills should they have behind them?
So I think one of the biggest skills that you have to have is ownership and communication. I know that I made this mistake really early in my career where I knew that my work was great, right? I was working in a SaaS platform. Our MQLs from organic had grown by 67%, which is absolutely ridiculous for the SaaS vertical in which I was in. But yet people thought I was underperforming, right? The numbers said differently, but I just had not communicated properly what I thought my job was, what they thought my job was, and what I was doing with my time, right? So if I was super set on fixing technical stuff, and my manager actually preferred for me to write blog posts, I knew that what was gonna move the needle was fixing those technical things. But instead of going, communicating, talking to all the relevant stakeholders, getting everybody on board with the plan, setting some goal metrics and some targets and being like, ooh, is match the target? Doing the same work, it would have been perceived so differently. But the mistake there was mine, right? I need to be my own advocate. And I failed to do that. So, yeah, I think communicating the value of your own work is going to be really key. Also, thinking big picture. I don't know if this is still relevant, but just don't believe what tools are saying. Just because tool X says you've got this many URLs that are that have a 308 on them, don't believe that. Like, what? Where are these URLs coming from? How does the tool work? How is the tool finding them? What is the issue? Is there an issue? What is the business impact? Just be more strategic and ask questions. Don't just trust tool experts at all. Never, ever.
Yeah, I think a lot of people in similar roles, they're just doing stuff. They don't really understand not why they're doing it, but how it's going to impact the business itself. They just have a list of things, like I said, from tools. You know, number one, switch machine on. Number two, crawl this website. Number three, fix what the tool tells them to. It's very robotic. Yeah. And I think that we do need to come away from the more robotic things into prioritization based on impact. You know, yes. Looking at costs. Obviously, a tool will give you like 20,000 things, but out of them 20,000 things, how is somebody supposed to understand what they need to do in order to gain the biggest impact towards the actual business goals?
So the an example of what I was telling you earlier about, I had this colleague that I mentored for a little while, and she was doing an audit of one of our sites, and I see that she creates a ticket, and it says, fix 308 URLs and a list of URLs. And I go on the list of URLs. These URLs are not relevant. I can't find them. Where are they linked, right? Like, how is this a problem? No. How did the tool find this? So I went onto the code and I was like, these are coming up on the hreflang. For some reason, these random URLs are being put in our hreflang in here. So fix 308 URLs is not gonna do anything for the tech team. It's actually gonna irritate them and be like, I hate SEOs. How many developers say I hate SEOs? So many. And that's one of the reasons, right? We give them a tool export, we tell them to fix a thing. They don't get a say in why it needs to get fixed. What are we expecting from the fix? And that was the wrong recommendation to give, but it came from a very tool-based approach instead of a business-based approach, or an approach that had a better understanding of the tech stack that we were working with.
Yeah. So the whole emphasis on SEO dev relationships, as you touched upon then, how can SEOs, because obviously a lot of them just blame the devs, but how can SEOs create a seamless, happy relationship with the dev team?
I don't know. I've been trying.
That's
marrying one.
Well, I noticed that. But I don't think that's far
doesn't reached. Scale. Marrying them doesn't scale.
No. But understanding their job, is that a big impact into the whole? Because after all, the purpose of an SEO asking the dev team to do something is to increase their impact and achieve their goals.
Yeah.
But so obviously the dev team have their own goals.
Yeah. I think it comes down to communication and also psychology, right? Like, what is the dev team's motivation? What do they enjoy working on? And what are the misconceptions or bad experiences they've had with SEO teams in the past that are going to make them resistant to listen to you, right? Befriend them as much as you can, but definitely try to pair your goals with their goals, right? So if I go to my dev team and I said, I want Core Web Vitals to be perfect, right? Improve my Core Web Vitals. Well, that's not going to make sense. That's not a ticket. And that's not motivating to them. Like, yes, the number goes higher. Congratulations. But what might make that change is our users are not having a very good experience because this image loads a little late and it changes the entire layout. And then you can see that they bounce around pages because they clicked the wrong thing. The user experience is negative because of this image that loads a little late. What can we do to change this, right? Something that I've also found helpful is instead of going to them with, you need to action this thing, it's like, this is my problem. What can we do to solve this? And pairing your goals with their goals. My goal should never be get perfect lighthouse scores, right? But if that's how I'm phrasing it to myself, because I want to measure the impact of the work in that way, I cannot tell them that way. I need to tell them in a way that's going to matter to them. So I want our website to be faster. so that our users have a better experience with it. It's something that they're going to get much more on board with than I need a perfect Lighthouse scores because Google says so.
What's your personal opinion on the whole Core Web Vitals being a ranking factor?
I mean, some people question whether or not it is a ranking factor. I think if Google said that it's a ranking factor, then it just is, right? They just like, what, thousands of ranking factors? It's just one of those, right? So Core Web Vitals, I think technical SEO has two roles: to delight the users that land on your website, right? And allow them to enjoy your website, and to let Google crawl, index, and understand your website. The fact that Google has had to say Core Web Vitals are a ranking factor so that SEOs start thinking about Core Web Vitals, I think says more about our Google-obsessed culture than anything else. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Google have released lots of things. Like they said, HTTPS. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to secure your website, but, you know, they said, unless they call it a ranking factor. I personally haven't seen anything that's impacted the rankings in a positive way, because the Core Web Vitals has been green. Have you?
Since the Core Web Vitals have been released, I've not had the chance to impact them as much as I wanted to. So I can't really tell you from my experience.
Right. But do you think the...
There was a study from Sistrix, I think, that like caused a lot of conversation, where Sistrix, I think the statement was that it was 10% of rankings or something like that had to do with Core Web Vitals. Later studies from other people, and I don't remember who has been making this, kind of like disprove that. I think it's just really hard to measure and irrelevant to a point, right? I think the best thing about Core Web Vitals was the way that they were designed, as these are the three metrics that are going to impact user satisfaction the most. I think that's where the bulk of the work that Google did there really benefits the wider ecosystem of web creators and administrators and SEOs.
Right. Now, I think I know the answer to this question. But if you had a magic wand that you could wave and tomorrow everything would be okay, what would that one thing in the industry be?
Oh.
Say suddenly you were given a magic wand and you could do anything you wanted in the industry, and tomorrow everything would be just how you wanted it. What would that one thing, if you had the power to change something, what would it be?
I would make every CEO and CMO love SEO.
Do you know what? That answer proves that you should never take perception into account, because I wasn't expecting that.
And you were expecting me to say something about the patriarchy, but that doesn't fix the industry.
No, exactly. But that, do you know what? That is such, the number of times I've been in meetings with the C-suite saying, well, you know, they just say, well, you're just a money pit. You just keep asking for more money. But it's like, yeah, I mean, oh my God, that's a totally, yeah, I can so relate to that. But yeah, I mean, perception is, as SEOs, some people presume certain things. They make decisions based on assumptions and perception without actually looking into it. And that's what I mean. So people make statements out there saying, well, this is how it is. Well, is it actually how it is? You know, so when it comes to, and I think this is where, you know, the psychology side comes in as well, understanding exactly what's going on and how can somebody take assumptions and perception out of the equation to create something better rather than doing things just because they think that's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I thought about many answers, right? I thought I'd give every SEO a psychology degree. And then I thought, why would I say that? Because then they can communicate better to their CMOs and C-level. And it's like, well, then make the C-level love them.
Yeah.
Nobody needs a psychology degree. Well, yeah, many people need a psychology degree, especially therapists. But yeah.
No, I'm very much mindset driven. Very, very much in the industry, think if you're in the right mindset, then you'll start to open up and think about things more. Mm-hmm. But what does somebody need to do as an SEO working on the ground to be in that right mindset?
I would say step away from stereotypes about how SEO is or isn't measured. I think we've given this up already, but we used to say that it was hard to measure the business impact of SEO, and not at all. I think the moment that you start thinking about your work in terms of business impact, that's the best step that you can take towards getting into that mindset that's going to get you the senior roles, that's going to get you the ears of C-level and all of that. Yeah.
Wonderful. So if there was something that the industry and everyone watching this or listening to this could do to help you with something in the industry, what would it be?
Oh, move to sunny TCMS. That would help me plenty.
Yeah. But is there anything, you know, industry changing that
yes.
you think?
Industry changing, it would be more transparent with your pitching process for speaking and be more transparent with how you select the authors for your blog, for your publication, for your magazines in the SEO industry, right? I think that would significantly make the industry better, because it would strip away some of the unconscious bias that leads men, especially white men, to be in power in the industry. And it would tilt it to a more merit-based type of approach. And that would ultimately lead to more innovation, lead to SEO being driving better results, being better valued by the C-level, salaries raising for everybody. Like, it's just such a no-brainer.
Yeah. So transparency is key. But within transparency, to get into the nuts and bolts of it, mm-hmm. what transparent things do they need to document or say or come out with in order for that to happen?
Yeah. So publications, key publications, such as the SEMrush blog, Ahrefs blog, Search Engine Journal, Search Engine Land. I believe everybody should have a very clear pitch to be an author process, and this is how we choose the authors, and this is the form that you fill out, and this is how you pitch to us. And maybe there could be a way of removing the gender of the authors in the selection process or in the pitching process, right? Be it removing the name while you're choosing and selecting, that could be a way to go about it. Well, that's actually been proven, like an efficient way to break subconscious bias in gender and race when it comes to hiring. And there's like some studies on it. So I think in practice, document how you choose your authors and your speakers and have an open application process. I know that that can be like maybe too much, so you can pre-qualify the work in different ways. But yeah, also like remove the author name, probably.
Yeah, so like a criteria process.
Yeah.
But having a strict criteria process, will that not have a negative impact on new and upcoming people who want
to get on stage? Depends on the criteria that you choose, right? So if you're choosing to be a speaker in this conference, you need to have been a speaker in a major conference before. That's going to self-perpetuate further, right? Alternatively, maybe you could have like 2 slots for new speakers and 4 for permanent speakers. Like, that's another way that you could prevent stifling innovation that way. But yeah, the criteria that you choose and the criteria that you choose and how you go about creating quotas to fight that self-perpetuating circle of speakers and writers.
Yeah. So I suppose it's not creating a criteria based on high success, rather than create a criteria based on the value of the information.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, having that kind of scenario. Do you think events and conferences are actually changing?
Yeah, definitely. They definitely are. We're seeing more women. We're seeing more people of color. We're seeing just more diversity in general. But that's also comes back to what I was saying earlier about, like, sometimes I feel like I'm in a circle, a bubble where everything's perfect and the industry's moving forward. And then all of a sudden we see an event with all male and, oh, it's just the women are on vacation. It's like, well, maybe that has to do with the fact that women are the main caretakers of children, and this event is during the school holidays.
Yeah,
maybe you've not spoken to enough women or whatever.
I have had private conversations with certain women who said, you know, I'd love to do this, but unfortunately, I'm a single parent. You know, things like that. And I don't, you know, there's things beyond the norm that I have to prioritize. And that's why I can't do these things. Yeah. You know, understanding the reasons and, well, okay, how can events cater to more single women? You know, do we have a creche? You know, all these different things, you know, is maybe thinking about how. Okay, well, you can't do it because you're a woman, single parent, and you need to be with your kid. Okay, so how can we help?
Yeah.
I think that's the question. It's what do we need to do as event organisers to help solve that problem so we can help you?
So one of the things that, for example, Arish has been talking about is paying speakers, right? The less of an economic burden that you put on your speakers to speak at your event, the more likely it is that you're going to get people who are more typically marginalized or disenfranchised. Women make less money. Like, the pay gap is so proven at this point that I feel stupid trying to justify that it exists. So if you want more marginalized people or disenfranchised people to participate in your events and be speakers, you need to make the burden, the economic burden of speaking at your event smaller, right? We've got travel, we've got food, we've got childcare to think of. So yeah, I would say that's a very direct way to go about this. But I do understand that some event organizers make no money out of the events. So it's a difficult one to think about, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I interviewed Simon from Blue Array last week.
Oh, I love Simon.
And like he put the London SEO Excel conference on. And he said he invested 100 grand to put that event on and made zero profit. You know, so
yeah,
it is difficult from that
speakers.
Side.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, well, time's rocked on. And I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And I'm sure that once this goes out, people will start to think a little bit differently. Yeah. Just to finish off, is there any last words you have? Or where can people find you and what sort of conversations would you like to have with them?
So you can find me on my Twitter at Lydia Infante M or my website, lydiainfante.com. Feel free to reach out if you are looking to understand how to grow your career. If you're looking for a mentor, I will have some time after my wedding. Or if you're wondering, like, how can you do better to make the industry more equal and you're an event organizer or a publisher, just reach out to me and I will connect you to the right people.
Okay. Right. That's amazing. Thank you for joining us today and giving up your time. And yeah. All the best with your wedding.
Thank you. I need the help.
I was going to say organizing.
I need as much luck as possibly.
Organizing. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.